This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
From KYW News Radio 103.9 FM, this is Bridging Philly, connecting our communities on the issues that matter to you. Presented by Gift of Life Donor Program. Organ donors save lives.
Hello, I'm Raquel Williams. Welcome to Bridging Philly. The primary election is April 23rd, and we want to make sure that everyone has all the information they need to cast their ballot. Everything from voter misinformation and disinformation to where you have to go to cast your ballot. We're talking with the Secretary of the Commonwealth, Al Schmidt.
Go into PennDOT when you're getting a driver's license or changing your address or changing your name. The system will queue you up to register you to vote.
And the Alexei Brodovich exhibit has arrived at the Barnes. We'll hear more about it from Sharaday Howard.
Pollsters became a medium in which we see the convergence between fine art and commercial art.
All that's coming up on Bridging Philly.
This is Bridging Philly from KYW News Radio 103.9 FM.
Ensuring a free, secure, safe, and fair primary election and general election is the top priority of Secretary of the Commonwealth Al Schmidt. The primary election is April 23rd, and we want to make sure that everyone has all the information they need to be able to cast their ballot. There are several different ways in which you can vote, and we will go over all of them. And of course, as history has proven, voter turnout is usually higher during the presidential election cycles, and we want to avoid some things that happened with regards to ballot counting, voter misinformation, disinformation, and the like that we did see in 2020. Al Schmidt, thank you so much for stopping by Bridging Philly.
No, thank you for having me on, Raquel.
Absolutely. So, in general, what did we learn from the 2020 presidential election cycle that we can make sure we try not to repeat this year?
Well, elections have changed a lot in the last few years, but they've changed for the better in Pennsylvania. When you vote in person, you're voting on a voting system where there will be a voter verifiable paper ballot record of the vote that you cast. Whether you vote by mail, there will be a voter verifiable paper record of the vote that you cast. So every vote cast in Pennsylvania has a record that is used in not one but two audits to confirm that the results are the same. So elections have changed a lot, but they've really changed for the better.
Okay. Well, that's good news. So let's first talk about the deadline for voter registration for the 2024 primary. What's the deadline for you to register?
The deadline to register to vote is the 8th of April.
Okay.
So that's fast. So it's closing in, and there's no reason to wait until the 8th. So if you have any interest in registering to vote and you want to vote in this coming election on April 23rd, now would be the time to do that.
So what I understand, Pennsylvania actually enacted automatic voter registration in September. How does that work?
The Shapiro administration and the governor is deeply committed to voter access and making sure that every vote that's cast is counted, provided it's cast by an eligible registered voter on or before Election Day, implemented automatic voter registration, which is similar to the system at PennDOT that has existed for decades, where you go into PennDOT when you're getting a driver's license or changing your address or changing your name, the system will queue you up to register you to vote. Mm-hmm. You can always decline. If you don't want to register, no one is forced to register. Yeah. But your information is much more accurate because it's not filling out a piece of paper to register that some clerk types in at some later date. Mm-hmm. You're confirming that it's accurate. You've proven your citizenship. You've proven your identity and all the rest. And automatic voter registration is a very useful tool to increase voter registration in the Commonwealth and to make sure those records are as accurate as they can be.
Yeah. Makes things much easier than having to fill out these forms.
It is. Yeah. And it was a big improvement. It was implemented on September 19th by the governor, and the Department of State, which I head up, and PennDOT worked together to change the system so that voters who are eligible are queued up to register to vote.
Got it. Okay. And of course, this is also an exciting time for 18-year-olds. who are going to be able to vote for the first time. Are there any resources available for first-time voters? What are some of the things that they need to keep in mind as far as the registration process and, you know, voting for the first time?
You really want to encourage people to begin voting at an early age, the first time they're eligible, and to build up not just a commitment to doing it, but the habit of voting, if that makes any sense. All sorts of studies have shown how important that is, that when people begin, you know, voting in every election, they keep that going. So when you're 18, whether you're getting your driver's license and you register to vote that way, or you apply to register to vote, one thing to keep in mind, whether you're 18 or 80, if you're voting for the first time at a polling place, you have to show one of several acceptable forms of ID in PA.
So that's only for the first time. You don't have to do that in your future endeavors.
That's right. The first time you vote at that polling place. So if you move to a different location, your polling place moves. You have to show ID again.
Okay. Got it. Do you think, just an opinion here for you, Al Schmidt, do you think we are preparing our young up-and-coming voters the way we should be to be excited and engaged in taking part in our civic duty?
Yeah, I'm really concerned that people get sort of dismayed or distracted by all of the nonsense that they're bombarded with on social media and elsewhere. There's so much information swirling around out there that's wrong. But like we said a moment ago, elections have changed a lot. So it's no wonder that people have questions about elections. It's just important that they go to trusted sources to get accurate information and not believe what somebody's uncle posted on Facebook or whatever else might be kind of shared unintentionally, unwittingly, or shared deliberately seeking to discourage people from voting. That's a real concern. So it's why you and I and others have a real obligation to share accurate information when it comes to elections.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about the measures that are in place to combat voter misinformation and disinformation. You know, there's a constant fight, as you were talking about, with the internet. Someone reads it and all of a sudden it's a fact and it's a source or whatever, and they're just sharing it out, not knowing that it may not be correct information. How do we get ahead of that?
I think one of the most important things, and we can't combat every lie that's swirling around out there. There are probably 10 lies that have been born since we began this conversation a few moments ago that are swirling around. But it's an obligation on us to always tell the truth about elections. So we should be mindful of what lies are being propagated out there so that we can tell the truth about them. If people are saying, we just talked about automatic voter registration, if people are saying non-citizens are registering as a result of that, completely untrue. Mm-hmm. Or undocumented immigrants are registering because of that, completely untrue. Yeah. Factually, empirically untrue. Not a subjective opinion. Not true in Pennsylvania. So I think we have to be aware of what is being shared so that we can make sure to tell the truth about it so that other stakeholders and other people who give a damn about elections, the entire foundation of our representative democracy depends on our participation in casting a vote and having our voice heard. Okay. So efforts to undermine that, I think, need to be taken seriously.
And where can we go to fact check all this information that's coming at us on the internet and the like? Where can we check that and make sure we have the right information? What source can we go to?
We have vote.pa.gov.
Okay.
We also have, through that, a sort of myths and reality page that addresses some of these head on. Because while you see different permutations of lies being spread, frequently it's the same ones again and again, like the one that I just mentioned. So we lay out clearly why those things are untrue and easily disproven. But Department of State is a good resource. Your county election office is also a good resource. In Philadelphia, the city commissioners here have a website with a lot of really reliable and good and accurate information on it. So go to your county, go to your state, and go to other trusted sources, nonpartisan, nonpolitical organizations. The Committee of 70, where I worked in the past, committed to free and fair, safe and secure elections. They put out very good information, have very good resources here in Philadelphia and now across the Commonwealth.
Bridging Philly continues in a moment.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
Back to Bridging Philly from KYW News Radio 103.9 FM.
Now, we also heard over the past couple of years, this is probably another one of those things that circulate when it shouldn't, about people voting twice, voting three times, duplicate voting, deceased voters, things of that nature. What's in place to make sure that none of that is going to take place?
So, Raquel, I was an elected Republican city commissioner in Philadelphia for 10 years. I took and tag election integrity very seriously, conducted hundreds of investigations whenever there were any allegations of voter fraud or election fraud. Mm-hmm. I think it's important to not sort of shrug them off. I think it's important to take them seriously and to investigate them. And when you investigate them, you find, except for on very, very rare occasion and in very isolated cases, that elections are safe and secure.
Right.
When you do, and when I did find individual cases of something amiss, refer it to law enforcement, whether it's U.S. Attorney's Office or Attorney General's Office or District Attorney's Office, for them to investigate further and, when warranted, prosecute. So I think it's important to take election integrity seriously, but be sincere about it. Don't raise allegations purely in an effort to undermine confidence in election results.
Right.
You know, people ask questions and they don't want to hear the answer to the question. They just want to raise the question to undermine confidence.
Yeah.
But when people have legitimate questions, they should have their questions answered.
No process is going to be completely free of any errors. And unfortunately, is that one little 1% or percentage of a point of a percent of incidents that happen that get blown up? See, people are voting 3 and 4 times and look what's happening. And it just spreads like wildfire and just gets out of control.
You know about them when they do occur, which again is rare, because it's easy to identify them. And then when they're identified, they're prosecuted. So I think whenever we do have those rare occasions, we should acknowledge them as evidence not of a weak system without safeguards, but rather one that does have safeguards.
Let's talk about the current voting system that's in place. I understand that there was supposed to be a new voting system in place, but you didn't want to test the waters with this new system during a presidential election cycle.
There's a statewide voter registration system that is used by all of our counties. So there's no votes cast on it. It's a database of everyone who is registered to vote in Pennsylvania that each county uses when they process voter registration applications, when they process mail-in ballot applications, and when they update to show that you voted, let's say. Your record to be updated to indicate that you voted. Doesn't show how you voted, only that you voted and in which elections. So the Department of State maintains that database. It was clear from the jump more than a year ago that that would not be ready for the 2024 election.
Okay.
So we immediately pivoted to make sure that our system, which has been around for a while and very, very tested, is upgraded with new hardware, new software, which is all completed, to make sure that when counties are processing applications and all the rest, they can do it without unnecessary delays.
And that's the SURE system.
That's right, the Statewide Uniform Registry of Electors. Right. It's really a database that all counties use for registration and mail-in ballot purposes.
Okay. We're talking with the Secretary of the Commonwealth, Al Schmidt. The primary election is April 23rd. We want to make sure that we get all the information out there that needs to be addressed. And Al, one of the things that I wanted to talk about is I know that there are concerns about things like electioneering, voter intimidation. Can you describe some of the security protocols that are in place to ensure the integrity of the election? And what about the safety of the poll workers?
In Pennsylvania, police are not allowed inside or at polling places. They have to stay a certain distance unless there's something amiss, like somebody hits somebody else or there's violence or threat of violence or something like that. Police in Pennsylvania have to keep some distance from the polling place so that it's not perceived as being intimidation or anything like that. And that's in Philadelphia. That's across the Commonwealth. Whenever there are allegations, when a judge or a voter reaches out to the county commissioners or Department of State or whomever, we make sure that law enforcement does go to the scene to make sure there isn't voter intimidation, to make sure that election board workers are not on the receiving end of any ugliness or hatefulness or anything like that, or anything is disrupting the casting of a vote by a registered eligible voter.
Got it.
The most important people on election day for in-person voting is not the Secretary of State, and it's not your county election directors or anything else like that. It's the volunteers who show up to work a 14-hour day, essentially volunteering because they're paid very little, to make sure that you can cast your vote. You can walk down the street or go to your local polling place. But those people make sure that your vote is cast and counted and keep things like electioneering at bay so that you don't have people inside of the room where you're voting handing out literature that says vote for this person or don't vote for that person. They're at the local level the people responsible for really safeguarding the integrity of voting at that precinct.
Yeah, we definitely have to tip our hats to the poll workers. They do endure lots of pressure and sometimes even have to deal with insults and aggression themselves. How are they appointed and what are their abilities and their limitations?
In Pennsylvania, there's usually five people who work at each polling place. The person responsible for running that polling place is called the judge of elections.
Okay.
And then there's two inspectors of elections. And they're elected every 4 years. And a lot of people don't know this, but they appear on the ballot. They're elected by the people in that precinct, or they're called divisions in Philadelphia, but at that precinct to run elections in that precinct. And it's intentionally devised so that you have members of different parties represented.
Okay.
So you have a judge of elections, then I said two inspectors. One is a majority from the majority party, essentially, or who received the most votes. The next is the minority inspector, or the person who received the next highest number of votes from the other party. So you have checks and balances built into the system at the precinct level to make sure that everything is being conducted on the level.
Now, there are many different ways to cast a ballot, as we said. If we can now go step by step on the various ways that voters can cast ballot, from in-person to mail-in, absentee, so on and so forth.
Many other states have had mail-in voting for a while. In Pennsylvania, our Republican House and our Republican Senate and our Democratic governor voted and signed this into law in 2019. The first time it was used in Pennsylvania for mail-in ballot voting was the primary of 2020. Voting by absentee ballot is very similar, and that had been around for many, many decades prior to that. So if you were going to be absent from the county, or you were sick or incapacitated in some way and you couldn't show up to vote, you were able to vote by mail. Okay. This is the exact same system. It's called, in most places, it's called no excuse absentee ballot voting, which is really just mail-in voting. So if you choose to vote by mail, if you want to cast your vote and make sure it's counted and ready to go for election day, say you're working two jobs, say you're a firefighter in Northeast Philly and you're working in Southwest Philly in a 12-hour shift, or a nurse or a doctor, a healthcare, or you have to get your kids after work and you work a long day, mail-in voting is very convenient for those people and it's safe and secure. Or you can choose to vote in person on election day. And everyone, based on where they're registered to vote, has a precinct. They receive a voter registration card in the mail that tells you where to vote. You can also go to our website, vote.pa.gov, to look up to see where your polling place is, or go to your county website to see where it is. It's all the same information.
That's good. Good information. You'd be surprised how many people are going, where do I vote? I don't know where I go to vote this year.
And that happens a lot, especially this cycle, because when turnout is high, you have a lot of people who haven't voted in 4 years.
Right.
They're still registered to vote, but they haven't voted in 4 years. And you know, they may have moved or something else like that, or their polling place might have moved. So it's always important to check to make sure you're registered and to make sure you know where to vote on election day, because it is time sensitive on election day. If you haven't voted by mail, the polls are open from 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. So you got to show up in person during that time to cast your vote.
Can we talk about drop boxes for a moment? I'm wondering why they are so controversial. I know they're more prevalent in, you know, Democrat-leaning states. Is it a secure way to cast a ballot?
I wonder the same thing, because it is a secure way to cast your ballot. Okay. You're returning your ballot directly to the Board of Elections. These aren't party drop boxes. These aren't, you know, outside organization drop boxes. They're not anything like that. They're Board of Elections drop boxes. In Pennsylvania, our guidance is that they have a camera on them 24 hours a day,
okay,
or when they're operational, that footage is retained in case there's any investigation or anything else like that that comes of it. And some counties don't offer drop boxes to their voters. We are in favor of counties doing everything they can to approve accessibility without compromising the integrity of the process. And drop boxes do not do that. It makes it so that you can return your ballot directly to the Board of Elections. And the deadline to apply for mail-in ballot is April 16th. It's only 1 week before Election Day. So if you apply the deadline and the county turns your application around right away and mails it to you, that's a couple days there, there's really not much time. So when you do that, you can return your ballot directly to a drop box so you don't have to worry about the amount of time it takes.
And will there be any changes to polling locations for voters that voters need to be aware of?
If your polling place moved, okay, let's say the street in front of it is under construction or the building is under construction or something like that, your county board of elections will mail you a notification. It's essentially a voter registration card that says where your polling place is.
Okay.
But again, you can always check by going to vote.pa.gov or your county election office website to see where your polling place is located.
Any accommodations for people with disabilities?
Every polling place in Pennsylvania is required to be wheelchair accessible. That means the door has to be a certain width so that a wheelchair could fit in, that it can't have steps going into it. It has to have a ramp or something like that. So every polling place has that accommodation. Also, the voting systems for voting in person have accommodations for the blind and others to help them navigate through and being able to cast their vote. It's required for those systems to be certified by the Pennsylvania Department of State.
Speaking of certified, I wanted to look ahead a little bit and talk about the certifying of election results. I understand states now have to certify their slate of presidential electoral votes by December 11th. What kind of challenges does that present?
There's a window of time, about 20 days after Election Day, when the counties have to certify their election results. And that means that's the certified total of votes cast for each candidate that's reported to the Department of State. And then the Department of State, essentially, it's not called certification, but the Department of State essentially certifies those results,
okay,
to report to the federal government. So every state reports who won and who lost and by how much. But it's not a huge window of time. It is like a very time-sensitive environment to get those ballots counted in time.
Okay.
Most states that have vote by mail, and plenty of red states as well, allow the Board of Elections, each Board of Elections, to begin processing those mail-in ballot envelopes prior to Election Day. We do not have that in Pennsylvania. That process can't begin until 7 a.m. on Election Day. So okay, that's why in Pennsylvania, you see our results come in a little bit later than mm-hmm. other states, because other states, red and blue alike, allow that process to take place earlier. With us, it can't. And that leads to a lot of frustrations. Voters want to know the results, and they want to know the results on election night. But it requires a little bit of patience until our legislature passes something allowing counties to do that.
So the primary election on April 23rd, that is the first full day of Passover. Any issues with that or concerns?
It is an issue. And Governor Shapiro and the administration has been in favor of moving that for a long time. Mm. The legislature, the Senate passed legislation that would have moved it to one date. The House passed legislation to move it to a different date. And the Republican Senate and the Democratic House did not agree on a date. So unfortunately, the primary didn't move. It's important if somebody has a religious obligation or a family obligation on that day that would keep them from voting, that they consider voting by mail. It's safe and secure and easy to do because we want to make sure everyone's voice is heard.
Are you expecting lots of challenges this year, later in the year, especially during the general election? We're thinking the margin of victory is probably going to be pretty small and probably will call for lots of challenges.
Yeah, it's always hard to tell. But the people who run elections are always it's a whole different environment when those elections are close. That's for sure. Like you saw in Florida some years ago. In Pennsylvania in 2020, Biden won by 80,000 votes. So that's relatively a small percent, but it is still 80,000 votes.
Right.
It's not like 100 or 1,000 or a few thousand or anything like that, like some other states have seen. But I think you always have to prepare for elections to be close. You never want to take for granted that everything is going to go easily. You have to be prepared for every possible outcome. And having run elections at the county level, I know how committed county commissioners and county election administrators are to make sure that things go just right.
Are there any particular concerns this year, whether it's the primary or the general election, that you are monitoring closely?
There's been, not just across Pennsylvania, but across the country, a lot of turnover when it comes to the people responsible for running elections, not just at the precinct level, but at the county level. Pennsylvania has had more than 70 senior election administrators leave since 2020. So there's a lot of turnover. When you have turnover and you have newer people running elections, they're more likely to make a mistake in preparation for election day in an unforgiving environment with no redos or anything like that.
Yeah.
There's no do-overs when it comes to elections, and it has to be just right. So Department of State has set up a training team led by an experienced election administrator to train new election administrators to make sure they're doing what they need to do to prepare in advance of election day, whether it's processing mail-in ballot applications or in-person voting. Department of State is filling that void to make sure that our people are trained and prepared.
Okay. And Al, every vote is going to be counted, right? I know people say, oh, my vote's not going to count. It doesn't matter. They're not going to count the vote. It's going to be in before they even count everything. Every vote gets counted.
If you are a registered voter and you cast your vote on or before Election Day, your vote will be counted.
And anything else we need to go over?
There's all sorts of offices on the ballot, from president to U.S. senator, right, to every congressperson, to every state representative, state senators, statewide offices like attorney general and auditor general and treasurer and all the rest. There's a lot on the ballot. So even though there is not a lot of competition at the top for president, there's a lot to choose from on there, and it's important to make your voice heard.
Okay. All right. Sounds good. And for more information, we can go to vote.pa.gov.
That's right.
Okay. And of course, there's that page with all the myths that are out there. Make sure you consider your source. When you get some information, you can always go to vote.pa.gov to verify your information. Secretary of the Commonwealth, Al Schmidt, thank you so much for joining us in Bridging Philly.
Thank you, Raquel.
Bridging Philly continues in a moment. Back to Bridging Philly, connecting our communities on the issues that matter to you.
Alexei Brodovich is a mid-century photographer who is way ahead of his time, and his exhibit has arrived at the Barnes, as we hear now from Sharade Howard on the latest Shara in the City.
So you might notice that part of our title, Astonish Me, cuts across the corner. That's fun and dynamic, but that was actually a technique that Brodovich had used in his magazine spreads while working for Harper's Bazaar and his independent projects.
That's Corinne Chong. She's an assistant curator at the Barnes. And she gave me a one-on-one tour of the Alexei Brodovich Astonish Me exhibition. She really explained to me why the photography made waves around the world in the mid-20th century, because his photography was considered art for the average person. And that in of itself was revolutionary.
This was his way of really like defying conventions of the time and a way of animating spreads in magazines and journals and so forth.
So Brodovich was known for not only being the father of modern photography, but really changing the game.
Yes, 100%. So he's best known as an art director, primarily for Harper's, you know, Bazaar for almost a quarter of a century. However, he also had side gigs as art director at Saks, for example, or during his time in Paris at some of the major department stores.
Wow.
As well.
So really the modern way in which we look at Harper's, I mean, he did that.
Absolutely. So prior to his hiring in 1938, mm-hmm. Harper's Bazaar, like just looking at the covers themselves, we did not see creatives experimenting with text and typography and layout and white space.
And decor.
And decor. And so when Brodovich was hired, he had, you know, integrated what he had learned during his time in Paris from artists like Man Ray and Miro and Picasso, because he had lived in one of the most vibrant and diverse neighborhoods in Paris, The neighborhood is called Montparnasse, where he would stay for 10 years. In 1920, he had escaped. He had fled the Bolshevik Revolution. During that time, he had engaged and socialized and befriended some of the key players of the School of Paris, artists such as, you know, Picasso and like Miro, whom he would later hire. And there we witness the intersection between Dadaism, Surrealism, Constructivism, Bauhaus, and he had absorbed those currents, synthesized them, and brought them to the United States. First in Philadelphia, our like home city.
So it was no accident that this exhibit's here in Philly, because he spent a lot of time here in Philly in the 1930s. Yes. Can you see that in his work?
It manifests most strongly, I think, when he was hired to be an instructor at the Pennsylvania School and Museum of Industrial Art, because he was charged with not just teaching, but inaugurating the advertising design program at the school. And during his time there, he had put photography in the foreground of the curriculum, which was very like novel at the time. He was also bringing in the major tenets of European modernism, coincidentally at the same time that Dr. Albert Barnes was at the peak of his, you know, art collecting. So there's strong correspondences there, and very much like Dr. Barnes, Brodovich is very committed to education and also instigating change, encouraging visitors to think and see in new ways.
And she said when you walk in, that's where you can see it from the start of the exhibition.
So our exhibition opens up with From Paris to Philadelphia, and really this is the first chapter in the trajectory of his career as a commercial designer, like graphic designer, photographer, and art director. So actually, I'd like to begin with this poster, Bal Banal, because it put him on the map. Yeah,
a lot of color. It looks like watercolor, also a turquoise, pinks, blacks, bold, very bold.
It's very bold, especially the contrast, the complementary, you know, almost neon pink and that vibrant green. And this poster actually won a competition. This competition was held for a big ball that was meant to fundraise for the Union of Russian Artists. And participating in this competition was also Picasso.
Oh, wow.
So this had won first place. And in one of his later interviews, he had boasted that half of Montparnasse is covered with my poster. And immediately after, you know, this victory, he no longer had to paint houses, you know, in Paris. It was one of his first jobs. But after this win, he took on jobs from major department stores in Paris, such as Le Bon Marché, Le Printemps. He became art director of Zaz et Métier Graphique magazine.
So this was the jumping point, really.
Yes, absolutely. And then he started to specialize in poster design. And poster design, if we look at, you know, the back here, like behind you, if that's okay, really.
Oh, wow. You can see a lot of Art Deco influence here.
100%. But also, if we look at the Libertad poster, we see elements of purism and Bauhaus and its minimalism and also geometry. And posters became a medium in which we see the convergence between fine art and commercial art. But another fantastic story this room tells is his versatility and dexterity working across different media. So again, we have our posters here. Above, we have a painting which served as a maquette for a work for a restaurant, a seafood restaurant in Paris called Le Prunier.
So this is also a reflection of the times, what an artist does.
Absolutely. So one of his beliefs was functionalism in his artwork and in his commercial art. And that meant distilling the key message of the content and also using the most economic means of visual communication so anyone can understand the message behind the work.
Minimalism. It gets right to the point, doesn't it?
Yes, he had an aversion towards the ornamental.
Okay, so these black and whites here, what are they?
Yeah, so during his time in Paris, he also took on a number of commissions to illustrate books. And these illustrations that you see here are engravings. This, again, underscores the fact that he wasn't just an art director, because art directors typically work behind the scenes, but he was hands-on.
All right, now it's time to really dig into Brodovich's time at the Harper's Bazaar and what he achieved while he was there.
I just want to show you the before Brodovich's arrival to Harper.
So he's such great shape.
Yes, and you can see, just looking by these designs, they're all illustrated, you know, like very, you know, pretty.
Right, 1929, yes. April, May, 1929.
Yes. Very Art Deco, you know, influence.
Very Art Deco.
And then all of a sudden, we see a shift. We see elements of surrealism.
Almost looks like Degas mixed with a little bit of...
Like Dali. And the biomorphic forms, like recall Miro. Remember the friends that he made in Paris? And so he had invited, like, Man Ray to contribute to covers, you know, as well. And the first edition featured Man Ray's photography.
So I mean, mind blown.
Yeah, so he had important connections. And for, you know, the first, you know, few years, he had permission to head back to Paris to recruit his friends, to infuse and reinvigorate Harper's Bazaar with, you know, new European, you know, talent. Many of these artists who are regarded as giants in what they call the art historical
canon. Original Rat Pack.
Yes, I love that. I'm gonna use that in the future, if
it's
you don't
yours,
mind. Yes, yes.
We moseyed on through a few more rooms of the exhibit, but wanted to leave some surprises. So go see it. Alexei Brodovich, Astonish Me, at the Barnes through May 19th.
Thanks for joining us on Bridging Philly, brought to you by Gift of Life Donor Program. Register as an organ donor at donorsone.org. That's donors, the number one.org. For Charity Howard and our producer, Patty McMahon, I'm Raquel Williams. Be well.